This episode is brought to you by Best Fiends. As you know, helping victims of crime tell their stories is my passion. But even I need a break from crime sometimes, so when I feel like I need a mental health pause, my go-to is the mobile puzzle game Best Fiends. Best Fiends is a puzzle game that you can play right on your phone, and it's super cool because you can go through all these levels, solving challenging puzzles that actually engage your brain. But it's casual, and anyone can play it. It's really fun. The great thing about this is it doesn't take up too much of your time, but it's awesome in the way that it fills up those moments where you wish you had something to do aside from scrolling through social media over and over again. You also don't need an internet connection to play it, so that makes it fun and easy. The game is visually stimulating with its bright colors and cute little bugs, and Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events so it never gets old. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
This is True Consequences, a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico in the American desert Southwest.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to all my listeners of True Consequences. I am joined today by Ambrosia Garcia, who approached me because she has a daughter who is missing, and I wanted to give her the opportunity to tell her daughter's story and share with us, you know, what we can do to help find her and hopefully help get some justice in this case. I know that it's been a long haul for you, Ambrosia, but before we go there, tell me a little bit about your daughter. What's her name? Tell me about who she is as a person and what she means to you, and then we'll kind of go into the story from there.
Okay. So I'm Ambrosia Garcia. My daughter is Amelia Garcia. She is 16 years old. She just turned 16 yesterday, as a matter of fact. She is my youngest daughter out of all of my kids, and she was born in 2004. She had a twin sister who passed away of sudden infant death syndrome at 4 months old. And she's just always been very special to me. I see her sister living in her. And so right now with her being gone, I have an emptiness for both of them. Yeah. And she's been going through a lot in her life. And I want to do everything I can to try and help her get out of the situation that she's in right now. She was reported as a missing persons August of 2019, last year. And so she is on missingnewmexicomissingchildrens.org. She has a picture on there. If anybody wants to go and see that, she's there.
I've also shared that image on my Facebook page. So if you are interested, it is on the post that I posted a couple days ago. So tell me about her. Like, what did she like to do? What was she into? I mean, what is she into? What are the things that you remember, you know, that she loved?
Well, me personally, that's a hard question for me because I haven't really been around her or been able to spend time with her since 2014. The reason why she was in the situation that she was in is because I had went away for a little while. I'll get into that in a little bit, but as far as I know from what her sisters tell me, she's just glamorous. She likes makeup. She likes watching the girl shows on TV, the Kardashians and things like that. And she's just, you know,
normal teenager
at the woman teenage, the transitioning stage of kid to woman. Mm. So she's just trying to find herself, of course.
Yeah. And from what you've told me, it sounds like she's in a difficult situation and potentially in some danger.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to help you get her story out and see if we can get some help. I know that you're hoping that this conversation will lead to maybe some more action on the part of the district attorney.
Yes.
And the state. So I'm hopeful that will happen as a result of this. To all my listeners, you know, if you can do anything to help out, that would be great. Either sharing this audio with people on your social media, sharing her image as well, the missing flyer, all of that will go a long way to creating more awareness for this case. So, Ambrosia, let's talk about what happened. How did she go missing? Where did it start? And where are we now?
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and start from the beginning.
Okay.
In 2006, I had filed for divorce from their father. We have three daughters. We had four with the one that had passed away with her twin. Mm-hmm. Three living daughters, and the oldest daughter in 2006 would have been 3 going on 4 years old. We split up, and the girl that my ex-husband was cheating on me with called CYFD, and CYFD came to my house and took all of our children for a safe house interview. This is how I found out it started. Mm-hmm. In that safe house interview with our oldest daughter, she had exposed him to sexual molestation.
And so she accused him of molesting her in that interview?
Yes. At 4 years old, she had told them that her dad was molesting her, giving them detailed information. So that was, it was really hard for me to deal with that time. Sure. But they had dropped the charges at the end of the case, saying that their evidence was not enough because her stories weren't consistent enough. And along with that, it wasn't just the case of the sexual molestation. It was the divorce case and also the child custody case. At that time, I was granted full sole custody of our children and kept him away from them this whole entire time from 2006 all the way up until 2014. At that time, I was struggling, and I had made some bad decisions in my own life to try and care for my children. I had 2 more at that time, so I had 6 altogether at this time. I was pregnant again with another, and I made poor decisions in my life to try and care and provide for my children, which ended me up with charges. Mm. That I had did some time for. He had caught wind of this and filed for custody of our children. And at that time, I was just in county jail, and I had put in a motion hearing to take his temporary custody away that they had granted him while I was incarcerated. And when they sent me to court during my incarceration, I had went to court, and the judge basically wouldn't hear what I had to say because I guess I was in chains and shackles, and she just didn't believe anything that I had to say about this man and who he was and what he was doing and what he had already been accused of in the past. And she still gave him custody.
It's just insane. I think it's important for my listeners to understand that it wasn't even you that filed the first report, you know, that brought this all up to the attention of the state. It was his girlfriend at the time, right?
No, the girlfriend was accusing me of not taking care of child neglect.
Okay, I see. Okay. But then that's when your daughter disclosed this. I got it. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So I can't imagine how gut-wrenching and heartbreaking that must have been, knowing that the state was just handing over your kids to him. That must have been horrifying for you. I'm so sorry that happened. Oh, my heart is just breaking for you right now. So he had temporary custody at this point. Yeah. The judge completely ignored your concerns.
Right. She granted him full custody at this time. Oh, and God. He wasn't even present. He didn't even show up to the court.
What?
Yeah, he wasn't there. He was did his not lawyer show there? Up. No. My mom was there appearing in person for me, and I was on a video.
Okay. I don't understand how that happened.
I don't
So then what happened?
So I got sentenced. I got sentenced to 9 years, suspended 3, so 6 years. So I did half of that time. So in that 3 years that I was incarcerated, at that time, Amelia, which is the one that's missing, or my daughter that's missing, she was 12 years old at the time. And so from 12 on up, there was problems in the house during my whole incarceration. My middle daughter, at that time was 13. She exposed him to the schools, the Albuquerque schools. She exposed him to the counselors. She was exposing him to as many people as she possibly could for physical abuse, and CYFD kept going to the house doing well child checkups and closing the cases. Mm. And he got to the point to where he was punishing my middle daughter for turning these things in. And he would like take her phone away. He would take away her. He wouldn't let her eat. He would take her blanket away. He would take away all her nice clothes and make her only wear what he would let her wear. Like doing things that weren't, that she couldn't prove.
Right.
That he was doing to her.
But it's still like mental and emotional abuse, right?
And until she ran away, he would physically abuse her and she would fight back and he would call the cops and she would go to jail. And she was only 13 at the time.
What?
And yeah. And so they took her to juvenile jail twice. And then the third time that this happened, they put her in a children's psych ward for a safe house or some kind of psychiatric evaluation. Because mm-hmm. she threatened to kill herself because he kept putting her in jail. And so when she got released from the children's mental ward, she ran away and she never came back. And so the whole time I was incarcerated, she was on the streets running mm-hmm. from him.
And she's 13, 14?
As of right now, she's 17. She's my middle child. But yes, she was 13 at the time. So from 13 to 15, she was running out on the streets and surviving on the streets by herself, hiding from him because she didn't want to go back.
I mean, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
What child would want to be on the streets? Rather, you know, like if there wasn't something wrong, she wouldn't be on the streets.
Right. And there was a case open for that because my mom was fighting for custody of her during that period of time. The judge actually granted her temporary custody of my middle daughter for a short period of time, and they actually gave her 6 months or something, And then whenever she went back to court, my daughter didn't show up because she was still afraid of her father. She was so afraid of her father getting her back that she would only check in with my mom. She wouldn't stay with my mom. Mm.
That says a lot, honestly.
Right.
Okay, so you have one daughter who's running away, who's living on the streets.
The other two are staying with him.
The older stay one. With him. Yeah. Okay.
So the older one, I kept asking her what's going on in the house because she had her own phone. But what I didn't know at the time that she exposed to me later, because I kept asking her, what's going on in the house? Is he doing anything to your sister? Is he doing anything to you? And she kept telling me, Mom, nothing's happening. But I felt it in my heart. Something was going on. And she kept denying it to me. Well, finally, in November of 2018, she was like, Mom, I can't take this anymore. This is what's going on. He has our phones tapped to his phone. Any text messages, any phone calls, he has an app to where he has it recorded, and he can go back and listen to our conversations, and he could go back and read our text messages. And that's why I wouldn't tell anybody what was going on. She said, but Mom, when I come home from school, he's in the bedroom with Amelia. He won't answer. They won't answer me when I tell him to open the door. When they open the door, it smells like sex. Just telling me all these things, that my daughter's stomach hurts, that she complains of cramping all the time. And she just can't handle it anymore. And so I told her to call CYFD. CYFD, it was the weekend. CYFD couldn't do anything. He had an alarm on his house. So what she did was that night at about 3 o'clock in the morning, she had the security code to the alarm on the house. She packed her bag. She deactivated the code of the security alarm and she left and went to my sister's house and called the sheriff's department and turned him in. And at that time, the sheriffs went over to the house, picked up Amelia, and took her in for a safe house interview. At first, she was denying that anything was going on. And so they got a hold of me while I was in the prison and told me that there was nothing they could do about it. That if she's not admitting to it, they don't see any other signs, they have to give her back. So the next day during school, after school got out, he went to go pick her up from the school. And the teacher said as soon as she was walking out the door or standing at the door and he got out of the car, she panicked and said, I don't want to go with him. He is molesting me. Please don't let him take me. And she panicked and she freaked out. So then they did another safe house interview on her where she admitted everything was going on since she was 12 years old from the very beginning, that he was having sex with her, and went into detail about it. And there's this big, huge report. So from this time on, CYFD had custody of her. I was released in February of 2019, just a couple of months after. This was from November to February. And they started the court hearings in family court on Amelia and what needed to be done. And there was enough evidence due to her safe house interview to relinquish his parental rights. And he actually agreed to sign his parental rights away. And so, so he signed his rights away. So that was admitting it in itself to me.
Yeah, I don't understand why any parent would sign their rights away unless they were caught doing something horrible like that.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
At all.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was shocked by that.
Yeah. And so she wanted to come home with me, but there was a procedure that had to be done. So from February to about May, I only got to see her one time. And when she came, she begged me not to send her back, but I had to, I was trying to tell her to be patient. Mm-hmm. And, so in about May, she just couldn't take it anymore. And she ran away from CYFD or from the foster family that that CYFD had placed her with. And she was missing from May all the way to June. Like the beginning of May all the way till the end of June for close to 2 months. And, back up whenever the courts had, when he signed away his parental rights, the courts had also issued a protection order stating that the respondent does not admit to the commission of the alleged facts contained in the petition, but that they had probable cause to order of protection until February of 2024.
So he denied the allegations.
But they had enough evidence. Yeah, he denied them, but he also it was in agreement of signing his parental rights away.
Right. And it sounds like that document stating that because they had enough evidence to prove what was happening, that's why they issued the order of protection.
Because of her safe house interview in admittance, okay, they had enough reason to order this protection.
Okay. So I'm just going to summarize really quick. So, he signed away his parental rights.
Yes.
The court issued a restraining order against him from contacting her.
Yes.
Okay. And she ran away from foster care and was missing. So this was through the summer of last year, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So then you found out where she was or what happened?
So, in June, I think it was June 26th of last summer, there was an anonymous call, mm-hmm, to 911 that there was suspicion of some people in a car at a parking lot in an apartment complex. And the police responded, and at about 1:27 a.m. on June 26th is what the report says, they found Amelia and her father in the car together and questioned both of them. And the father actually told them that he had just picked her up from my house and I hadn't even seen her. Yeah. So he was trying to turn it back around on me. And she wouldn't even talk to them. So, but she was reported as a missing person. So they took her back into custody of the state. They, from there, she was refusing to go back into the foster family. They had placed her in a shelter. They started doing intense therapy on her. And from this point on, she was denying the allegations that she had earlier admitted to on her father. Now she turned her whole story around, said that me and her siblings and my family had told her to say these things and that he's never done anything to her.
It's pretty normal for victims of abuse to be able to be manipulated by their abusers.
Right.
That's pretty normal. And it's hard to know, you know, I'm speculating here, but it's hard to know what the conditions were in the foster home that she was in. It's, you know, without knowing exactly what happened there. So I know that sometimes people want to get mad at victims for their behavior. But I think it's important for my listeners to know that it is pretty common for a victim of abuse to side with their abuser. And it's not...
He is master manipulator. He did the same thing to me whenever I was with him. I mean, I was 13 years old. He was 16 whenever we first got together. And he would abuse me mentally, physically, sexually even, because I knew he was cheating on me and he would still come home. And you can't really say that your husband or, you know, because I got married to him right when I turned 18. And he was very horrible to me when we were together. So I already know his manipulation tactics. Like, mm-hmm. he would beat me up and then he would go and buy me some flowers or a necklace, you know,
and apologize. And
yeah. And yeah, it was all good because he was, you know, treating me out or whatever.
And then you start to second guess yourself, right? You start to second guess, you know, maybe I'm making this a bigger deal than it is. Maybe he is a nice person. Maybe he does love me. Maybe he does care about me. Like, that's all normal. All of that is normal.
Or tell you.
Yeah.
Like, he would tell you, like, he would make you feel like you were nothing without him. He's the world to you and he'll give you everything. But if you left him, then nobody would want you.
And for a young girl, it's hard for them to be able to identify that behavior. Right. Any young person, you know, it makes me sick. And I'm so sorry that your daughter is going through this. It's just, it fits the pattern. You know, I'm a survivor of abuse. I know that pattern. I know how he's doing that because I lived through that. My mom lived through that. So I just want to give you that validation, you know, on the show for my listeners, because I know that sometimes people want to be like, oh, well, she should have stuck to her story or whatever. You don't understand what it's like unless you've been in that situation.
Yes.
And you should just be thankful that you don't understand that.
Yes. During the time that she had been gone, we actually had a custody hearing. But that CYFD was going to issue custody back to me. But because she was missing between May and June, when we had the hearing, the judge said that she could not issue custody of the child that is absent, that is not in the custody of the state at that time. And so because of that, they're saying that what I can do about this case is limited because I don't have custody of my child.
They won't give you custody because she is not with you.
Right. I have my parental rights because I didn't do anything to her. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. based on me, but I don't have custody of her. So at the same time, I'm limited to what I can do in this case. So when they got her back and she was saying that it was all made up and he didn't do anything to her, we actually had another hearing when she got back, about 2 weeks after she got back into custody, where she actually asked to speak to the judge in chambers. So obviously the whole time she was with him, somebody taught her what needed to be done, because no 15-year-old just knows what to say whenever they get back. And during that time, she had told the judge that she didn't want to come home with me. So even though CYFD was trying to give her back to me, she was refusing at this time. They postponed the custody hearing to try and give her some time with treatment to see if they could get her back into a stable mind frame.
Mm-hmm.
And at which time in August, so a month and a half later, she ran away again. And since then, she's been gone.
She ran away from the states?
From the shelter, the state shelter.
Okay.
She's been gone ever since. And so, I have reason to believe that she's with her father and he has her hiding somewhere. I can't prove it, but that's where she was last time. And I just need help because from what the state's telling me and everything else, I just don't understand. My lawyer has sent me emails of the proof that they have, the DNA evidence during the rape test that they did from the beginning, that they have evidence. And I just don't understand why nothing's being done. Because even if she was found again, she would go back. Her mind is not right. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's an order of protection against him.
Right.
Do you think that the police and the state, that they don't know where he is?
Okay.
Is that the problem?
So that's another thing. Once she disappeared again in August, I was doing everything I possibly could. I called the attorney general's, I called the DA's office, I called everybody. They said that they hadn't had an open case on him, so there was nothing that they could do. I looked at the report that I had from my lawyer to see who the officer was that found them the first time together back in June.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a hold of the station that he was stationed at. And even though he wasn't on call at that time, I spoke with a supervisor who had relayed a message to the officer that there was a protection order at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Which later on back, from August to November, nothing had happened. But then in November, they had actually issued a warrant out for his arrest for violating the restraining order back in June of that same year. And so they backdated it. Yeah. From November back to June, they backdated the warrant. And when he received the warrant, I guess, he had hired a lawyer, and there's actually an open case right now on violation of the restraining order that his lawyer has been waiving his appearances. So
he's just delaying the court appearance.
Yeah, he never even got arrested or anything for that.
So now there is an investigation. Now there is a case against him by the state.
Only for violating the protection order.
Okay.
There's not from what I've been told, they are investigating the criminal side of this. He was charged with criminal sexual penetration of a minor.
Yeah.
They are supposed to be doing something, but from what I get out of it, they're limited to what they can do because of the COVID-19. That's the excuses I get out of it whenever I speak to the state about the situation. So.
Mm. Oh my God. This is a perfect nightmare. So there's a warrant now. There's an investigation allegedly into potential criminal charges for the sexual abuse.
Yes.
The state won't talk to you because you don't have custody of her.
Yes.
And so now you're left kind of wondering what's next, what's going to happen. Aside from, before we get into like what you want and what you need from my listeners, are there any other details that you want to add to this? Is there anything else currently that's happening that you want to include, or do you want to move right into the next part?
No, that's about it. All I have for right now. Okay. That, yeah. Okay.
So what can my listeners do to help you get your daughter to a safe place? What are you hoping will come out of this?
I want them to act on the evidence that they have. I want the DA or the attorney general or whoever's working this investigation to act on the evidence that they clearly have so that my daughter can be safe. Because until she's somewhere where he cannot reach her, I feel like she's not safe.
Yeah. Clearly. Clearly not safe. Which police department was in charge of the original investigation? Was it Albuquerque Police?
Yes.
Was it Bernal? Okay. So it's APD. And it would be the Albuquerque District Attorney that people would need to reach out to get his attention about this case. Is that correct? The Bernalillo County?
So.
Yeah.
I believe so. I'm not sure because, like I say, the only one that I really have contact to with this investigation is the actual caseworker through CYFD with my daughter that tells me she can only give me limited information because of the situation.
I think you're right, Ambrosia. I think that as long as she's in his hands, she's in danger. It's not okay. She's only 16 years old. She's not an adult yet. And even if she was an adult, it's still wrong. That's her father.
And it's been 4 years. And at this point, I believe that in her mind, she feels some kind of normality. And that's not okay either.
Yeah, it's pretty normal for an abuser to normalize their behavior.
Yeah.
And to create that mentality in their victims to make them feel like it's okay. But she's still a child. You know, she's a teenager, but she's still a child. She still needs to be protected. And I just want to say to you, and I hope I don't, you know, cause you to get upset about this, but I just want to say, like, I want to say thank you for being a mom who cares and a mom who fights for her daughter's protection, because there's so many parents that don't care in this state, and the state has a track record of not caring about what happens to kids. And I want to thank you for being that parent.
You know, I feel like at first she might be mad at me, you know?
Yeah.
But in the long run, when she finally is safe and healed, that she'll thank me for it. And I'll never give up on her.
Yeah. That's the love of a mom. And that's what she needs. I would encourage you, Ambrosia, to see if you could get some help creating a petition on change.org. And if you do that, you know, get me the link and I will share it on all my social media. I will share it everywhere I can to help get you a bunch of signatures to get the attention of the district attorney, because this is urgent. This is critical. It's so important that Amelia is in a safe place where she's no longer being hurt.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to say to my listeners before we wrap up?
If there's anybody out there that has any ideas, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
That's okay. It.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I know it wasn't easy. I'm hopeful that this will get you the exposure you need in the community to get some action on the part of the state. I can tell you that there are people who listen to my show that are in the district attorney's office. So I can tell you that. Okay. So please, if you're listening, whatever you can do to help, it means the world to Ambrosia and to Amelia's sisters and to everybody who cares about her. It's the right thing to do. And the state needs to do right by kids. And the state needs to do right by Amelia. So, again, thank you for your time. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay safe, New Mexico.
Thanks again for listening to True Consequences. Follow us on social media, on Instagram and Facebook at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is hosted, written, and produced by me, your host, Eric Carter-Landine. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.